Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour, and I'd like to welcome you to it. Today's theme, break the rules. Be a rebel for a change. Why? Because now more than ever, certainly more than at any time in my lifetime, we need all of us who care about honoring the truth, the sanctity of our bodies, our choices, not the government, not private industry that capitalizes off our fear, insecurity, and uncertainty. We need to get out of our comfort zones. We need to say, yes, I may not be an expert, but I'm certainly abounding with common sense and motivation to want to find the truth. I have published hundreds upon hundreds of articles on COVID, on vaccines, upon all the different things like 5G, on pesticides, on sugar, on fluoride, mercury fillings in our teeth, all these topics that can negatively impact us if we don't know the truth, if we go along with the consensus, and the consensus is always wrong on these topics. So let's inform ourselves, let's become educated, and then let's take to the streets to peacefully protest, let's write letters, let's refuse to vote for politicians that are voting on behalf of corporate America and not us. Now to the lecture.
What do we really like about Marlon Brando before he became three people and James Dean? What do we like about them? Immediate, quick thoughts. He was a rebel. Attractive. A mystique.
Shot from the hip.
Defiance. Defiance of what? Against everything, right? All right.
Icon.
Well, it wasn't an icon then, all right? Icons would come later. I think all of us can associate with people who are defiant, defiant with a purpose. You can be defiant simply because you're angry or even defiant because you're dysfunctional. Being defiant per se is not a virtue. It's how you're defiant, why you're defiant, and what the purpose of that defiance represents as a statement that you're making. As kids, we all at some point are defiant. You know, when we pull all that strength together and we say no. As adults, we find it very difficult to say no, because depending upon who we're saying no to, we have a chance of loss, and we can lose a lot. You go into any workplace in the United States, and frequently people will complain about what's not right, but they won't make any changes. Because if they were defiant in any way, if they were a rebel in that office, they'd be thrown out, because standardization, this blandardizing, making everything the same in the way we live in our society has become the norm. And in fact, at that time it was the norm. That's why in part they were rebelling. But they grew up. All of us who grew up as baby boomers saw the time when we could rebel. And then the rebellion stopped, and people went back into that very same thing they were rebelling against. They became what they were angry at. And of course, then they tried to appease that and assuage that by sometimes participating in some type of activity. It's like a health food store. Down in Dallas, they have one of the largest health food stores in America, as they do out in Santa Fe. If you gave a talk on health and nutrition in Santa Fe, you'd have 15 people show up. And you think, well, how's that possible? I mean, it's a very hip town. I mean, you know, look at the real estate prices, you know, $500,000 for what was 10 years ago a $50,000 house, and they've got all these great restaurants and very expensive clothes and cars and very, you know, people in their 35 to 50 years of age, and they've got to be more aware, and they got to want to do something about their health. No, absolutely not. You know, you've got a lot of masseuses, that's a pleasure principle. You've got big health food stores, the biggest in America, but it's not a health food store. It's a store based upon style. So as a result, you go into a store and the largest selection is meats, and then alcohol, then candies. Right? No, not organic. And that the health food is a little tiny 2,000 square foot area. The produce is not all organic because trendy people want full selections of everything. So then you got to think, gee whiz, I thought Santa Fe was a real together place. Well, it is if you believe in illusion. But if you want reality, it's not the place to be. It's just a bunch of very wealthy people, primarily from California, who went in there without any consciousness of what they were going to do to the local people who really were conscious and were growing organic produce and involved in spiritual activities and Native American appreciation and respect. And suddenly in come the yuppies who just buy up anything knowing it's going to quadruple in price after they've made their improvements. And so they hang out in the cafes and they're trendy, but it's caused all the local people no longer to be able to live there. So as a result, any local people who didn't own already, they now have to live in Albuquerque and commute up to Santa Fe. Yeah, it's one of the phenomena. And when I went out there to lecture, I had one of the smallest lectures in my career, and yet enormous amount of promotion. I mean, enormous amount of promotion. I even sent a person in ahead for 6 weeks. I bought time on a radio station every week to do a two-hour show. Ads. It wasn't that they didn't know that I was coming, and it wasn't that there wasn't benefit in the message. It's that these people who are into trendiness are not into real health, because they know that there's a secret. And the secret is that if they were really interested in health, they would do it all. They would make some fundamental changes. So they pretend to be interested in health. And they have all their dysfunction. They have all their negative stuff. It's just wrapped so beautifully and so stylishly, you'd never see their dysfunction. Like in 90% of America. You'd never know what kind of dysfunction you're dealing with because it's just packaged well. And it's kind of interesting what you see, the raw nerve of society. It's dysfunctional on television today, where people come up and, you know, this guy cheated on this woman, and these people argue with one another, and they're trying to show justification and redemption to the public. And of course, the public never redeems in that respect. They simply identify. What we don't see are people who are successful, seemingly successful, because they're not going to go into that arena. They're not going to have anyone try to expose them. In fact, in our society, the more successful you become in anything, the more you want to isolate yourself from people who are not successful, in part for the reason that you know something that other people yet haven't figured out. There's no separation between the success and non-success as people, because materialistic success means nothing. Financial career success means nothing. It's irrelevant. Success of living is very essential. And people who are successful of living are very vulnerable. Vulnerable people don't have fears about who they're around, nor do they have fears about what they say, what they do, what they believe. It's out there. So what are you going to say that's going to embarrass them or make them feel bad? You're not going to say or embarrass them on any level, because their vulnerability allows them a sense of immunity. But people who know they're hiding their dysfunction behind their workaholism, their mad drives for success to be acknowledged, their need for love in a relationship, their need for people to say, oh, you're a good person. And frequently the person that is the caregiver is just as dysfunctional as the caretaker. It just manifests differently. But behind all these facades is the empty soul. And they don't want people to see it. When you are in the presence of someone who's completely healthy, happy, successful at life, it's like a radar. It's like a fluoroscope. They see you all for what you are. So you stay away from those people. Because if you're around them, they're going to reflect what you're not. It's like, how could you go into a trendy health food store that's filled with junk and spend your money with the idea, because you bought some vitamin C or you bought some sprouts, but you also bought the meat and the alcohol and the sugar, that you're really healthy? If you went into a real health food store and there was nothing but organic produce and no animal products, and you were buying consciously because you knew that the purpose of being there was to honor your life, then there's no deception. So you're going to stay away from that store. Remember, you're always going to stay away from that which is going to mirror what you are. And you'll generally be around that which continues to accept you in your disguises. And that's a danger. That's why we frequently don't grow. So what I want to do is show you the rebel, because the rebel will wake you up. They clang that bell, and everybody looks at them, and they get people's attention, and they say, I don't like what I see. That's what the rebel does. Now remember, the rebel is also the person that embarrasses us, because they're going to say and do things that we're going to feel uncomfortable with. Now if we were honest, we wouldn't feel uncomfortable, but generally they're things that we hide. We're selective in what we're functional at and selective in our dysfunction. The topic, break the rules, be a rebel for a change. Prepare a detailed survey of where you are versus where you need to be. That's where it all starts. Now, let's go over that again. I want to make sure you really understand this. This is important. Where are you in your life versus where do you need to be in your life? Because just like training for a marathon, if you're only able to do 1 mile and you know you got to do 25, then you've got to change an awful lot and be focused and really deterministic. You've got to look in at 26 miles and you've got to keep thinking 26 miles. You've got to see yourself doing 26 miles 100 times, 1,000 times before you do the marathon. You've got to have done it in your mind. The way that you become successful in being who you ultimately should be, the real self, is you've got to see who you've got to be, need to be. And you can't get rid of that picture. You can't allow anything else to distract you, because everything is out there as a distraction. In fact, it's there for us to distract. Everything in our society is made for distraction, a commercial distraction. Someone is being paid to distract us. That's how clever it gets. Now, let's go through it. And here's the things I feel that if you pay attention to, it'll help. Your view of self. What are you as a self? How do you manifest as a self? What makes you different than other people? It's the uniqueness of self that distinguishes your character. Are you the kind of person who just likes to fit in? Because you can't be a rebel and fit in. See, part of the problem is we're always trying to fit in. But look what you have to change that's not normal in the changing process to fit in. Think of all the things that you would not have allowed to go down around you by friends, relationships, workplace, government, religion, institutions of business, because you were afraid that you weren't going to fit in. I know people that will go and get a bad haircut and give a tip. You ever done that? Yes, you have. You're lying. Don't lie. Now you're going to get herpes. Do you realize that? Have you ever had bad service and given a tip? Yeah. Of course you have. Yeah. Why?
The thing to do.
Embarrassed? Embarrassed by what? Huh? You won't like how they're going to react to you. So even though they've given you bad service, you're going to give them a tip, and they're not going to know that it was bad service. What if? No, you're going to let them know, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I get my money back too.
All right. Think if you did this. Think if you wrote what it was that was wrong with the service. And without any anger. Because if you get angry, then all you're doing is creating reaction. Without anger, you simply say, I give a tip based upon the service. I don't know what kind of day you've had, but maybe you'll think twice based upon the service you gave me, if you just read this and give it to them. Right? Let them see what you think without the anger and without in any way denigrating them. You're just focusing upon the service. What if you did that in other ways? What if you had a person in the office that was a racist or would tell racist jokes that you found offensive? Would you say anything if the person was in a position superior to your own or physically intimidating? Have you let that go by? Have you ever been in a situation like that where you had a real jerk and no one said anything? Any of the women here had a real, real nasty, vicious person in the office that gossiped, maligned other people? Of course you did. It's in every office in the country. We have these people, right? And how many times did anyone ever really confront them? You would talk about them to other people, but how many times did you confront this person and say, your behavior, your conduct, your attitude is simply not positive? So don't share it. It's your office, it's your environment too. You have a right to that. But again, the rebel would. That's also why we like a rebel. The rebel's going to stand up to something bigger and stronger, even if they get their butt beat. There's character in that defeat. Think of the people who stood up like Rachel Carson to the major institutions. No media supported her. No major media supported her. They all denigrated her. They allowed the pesticide industry to gang up on her. She alone started the environmental movement in America. Now that's something. That's within our lifetimes. One woman, alone, without financial resources, just truth on her side, waged a single person war against the entire industry and the government that supports that industry. Have you ever known the government to ever take the people's side until it was forced to? Never. Never. Because who makes up the government? People who are in positions to influence those that they put into office. And so you've got a double negative. You've got the people causing a problem and the people protecting the people causing the problem. Look at Waco. Did Janet Reno resign? No. Hey, I think if you caused the death of 38 kids, right, you burned them up, I'd say that's a pretty serious issue. I kind of stepped down. No. It's like, okay, next event. That's what it means to have the right people around you. Just think of all the things that we have going wrong in the world in which we live today. And think of all the people making mistakes that adversely affect other people. And think, we have supported that. The rebel wouldn't. Trouble is, we don't have any rebels today. Did you notice that?
Other than you.
Oh, no. There's a lot of, well, no, you're a rebel when you individually and alone, not as a group, take on an issue. That's when you know you're doing something. There's a, until you go up against someone and get your ass kicked. And you really get hurt when you're threatened to lose everything you have in life and you still stand up, then you're a rebel. Otherwise, let me tell you something, never believe. Never believe people who say they're with you. All right? Never. Remember I said I trust nobody? All right? I've learned. I'm very clear. When I go into a fight, I go in alone. If other people benefit from the fight I'm in, that's fine.
Never trust anyone who tells you
they're with you. Only when they're with you completely. It's like Nader's Raiders, where there were 500 young lawyers and idealistic lawyers who went to Washington to fight the corporate, you know, greed and corruption. Within 3 months, there were like 10. See? When it becomes inconvenient, then they're no longer a rebel. They're a rebel for a day. Boy, isn't that nice? Everybody can be something for a day, you know. Everybody can write one letter. I did my thing. I wrote a letter. Yeah, well, today's another day, another issue. Well, what do you want from me? I mean, how much of my life do you need? I wrote a letter. That was 8 years ago. When you're supporting a boycott, you know. I'm talking about you're a rebel when every day of your life you're a rebel. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like being honest. When every day you're honest, when every day you commit yourself to health, truth, purpose, then you've got a life worth living. Because then there's meaning in what you've committed yourself to. Otherwise, you get, again, the analogy, what you just said reminds me of all the people that go to the health food store and buy the meat and buy some granola. I'm buying health food, right? I'm shopping in the health food store. It's specific. And I'm sure many of you in this room have and continue to be conscientious in everything you do. That's a rebel too, consciousness in everything they do, being aware. That's what makes a rebel a rebel, and then the courage to lose it all. Because if you're afraid of losing anything, and Rachel Carson was afraid of losing nothing, and she lost in the moment only, she lost her reputation, They besmirched her. They dragged her through the mud. She lost it all, and the people were willing to believe it. Because for the people to have risen up in protest against the abuse of their own food supply, the adulteration of the food supply, would have meant they would have had to make changes. But the average American has been brain dead, unconscious, for centuries. It's nothing new. It didn't start with McCarthyism. It's been around a long time, allowing themselves to be exploited. Remember, you have to allow exploitation before it. I mean, why did we have a civil rights movement? We had a civil rights movement when enough individuals were willing to sacrifice everything to stop it. That's the only way it stopped. Do you realize that? Now, Malcolm X was a rebel. King was a rebel. They weren't afraid of loss, and they did lose. One lost their life, the other lost later the life, but they both lost freedom. They lost respect until others finally had the courage to come up and stand beside them. Right? Then when enough people started to commit themselves after the first, they saw how hard it can get when you begin to challenge anything. But people take their lessons early in life when they see that there's reward for acceptance and pain and rejection from challenge. Punishment's always going to be always present in your mind. Reward, punishment, reward, punishment. This is how people are motivated. This is what makes some people stick with a life that's predictable, maybe even materialistically successful, but painful in that it's empty. And think of all the baby boomers who today feel this gnawing angst. And what's their idea? Yeah, they'll leave New York. They'll go live in Sedona. They want to get out. What are they doing? Are they committing themselves to anything other than continuing their own self-interest? Now they can say, yeah, I'm out of the rat race, man. I've changed. How have you changed? Now you have a $700,000 to $1,500,000 house in Sedona in a neighborhood that allows no blacks, Puerto Ricans, Native Americans. Nice place. Go to a Native American place and make sure the Native Americans don't hang out with you, right? But buy some of their stuff. But of course, don't buy Native American stuff because that's too cheap to put in a yuppie's home. Buy something made in Korea, charging outrageous prices through an art dealership so you can say, see that rug? That's a Native American rug that I paid $3,000 for. But was it made in America? Well, no, but that's not material. You see what I'm talking about? Don't interrupt. I'm talking about the difference between real, substantive, honest change and playing the game of life. That's why all systems are corrupt. Everything out there is corrupt. Nothing is real. Only the children. Nothing else. That's why I believe in nothing. The only thing I believe in is every day what I create, because that's the only thing I can confirm is real. Think how many times you thought you had love in your life. You thought it was real? Huh? You did in the moment, didn't you? Well, how real was it? It wasn't. But you needed it to be, right? When you need something too much, you should never have it. Because it's only going to weaken you and continue the illusion that what you now have that you needed is going to help you. Why do you think it's so hard to get healthy when you try so hard getting healthy? Health is effortless. Balance is effortless. Peace of mind is effortless. When we try too hard, we miss the whole purpose of it. That's the whole idea of knowing what self you're starting with. So how you view yourself is going to determine what you're ultimately going to be. Your view of life. What is the purpose of life? Shouldn't we have a reason for living? What's your reason for living? What? This is not a rhetorical statement. I want to hear some feedback. I can call it as I see it. Liars, liars. But a person can be filled with a sense of love and willing to share it and still be bounded, very carefully guarding their life, taking no steps beyond, staying close to home. That's unfortunate. And sometimes you can have a person with all the love but fear at the same time. Love is a sanctuary for them. Familiarity is their sanctuary. They stay close to what is familiar. That's food, that's clothing, that's people, that's reading material, that's conversation. And if you were to listen for a year to their conversations, you would hear the same conversation ad nauseum the whole year. Well, what if they broke through those fears? Now they take that love outside. And then they say, whoa, I wasn't aware there's all this other stuff out here. Yeah, that's what's nice about life. Once you're a rebel, you see it all. This past summer, I was barreling down the roads in Montana and Wyoming and Nevada and Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and going up in the desert, mountain climbing. And everywhere I went, I saw these free spirits out there, bikers. And you want to know something? For as rough and tumble as they may seem, I found more honesty, poignancy, poetry, and freedom in their thought than any of the academic armchair philosophers I've ever met in my life. These people are out there living the life that they believe in. They don't have a home. Wherever they go to next day, that's their home. And we can say, well, that's their, they don't have a job. Well, who cares? I'll tell you, they're very, so many of them that I met, and again, I would separate those that I met that were functional from dysfunctional. The functional ones were very ethical, man. They dealt in things, they saw things as right, and they lived that, or they saw it as wrong, and they challenged it. But what they were expressing was a sense of freedom. One after the other, I said, why'd you let your hair grow down to your shoulders, and you know, you're just out here on a Harley and just riding up to Montana, and you're going to hang out there until it gets cold and then drive down to Southern California? Because I don't want to be around a lot of people that just have a lot of crap to throw at me. And a lot of, remember, no one's born on a bike. They came from someplace, and almost all of them at one time were nerds. You know, they all came from a background like the average person, but they're not today. But society is very threatened by anyone who challenges that stability. Remember, we are a nation that thrives commercially on maintaining certain social standards. If you challenge the social standard, the norms, you challenge the lifestyle, the behavior, the consumering patterns, why we spend what we spend on, how we constantly create debt for ourselves, more than what we're capable of supporting. So we're always under stress to pay for a debt to substantiate a lifestyle that we were told that would make us feel like we're buying the American dream. These people want nothing of that. And I know a lot of artists who have the same idea. We say, gee, how can you live this way? You don't have anything. Oh, I don't? What do you consider having that's important? And they show you their art, their freedom, their expression, their emotion, their love, their joy. Well, with all that they can share that's not just materialistic, they've got a lot more than anything you've got that's materialistic. And this is what the rebel does. Your age. I mentioned this on the show with Dick Gregory. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you were? Huh? It was actually Satchel Paige who said that. How old? Huh?
8.
How old are you?
Actually,
yeah, actually first.
64.
How old are you? 54. All right. How old do you want to be?
25.
You want to be 54. Okay. Why do you want to be 54?
Because I remember what it was like when I was younger. And I don't want to go back there.
Well, that's to assume that you couldn't create a greater dynamic being younger.
Well, if I could change what I was like when I was younger.
Well, the whole idea is you can change anything.
All right. Well, then I'm probably 27.
Biochemically, you can do that. It's possible to reverse the aging process. It's absolutely possible. But you can't do it unless you're a rebel. You can't do it. Because you see, the most important part of aging is your mind. Because your mind gives you the freedom to be all the things you want to be, when you want to be them, and do the things you find are important. Otherwise, just taking some pills and potions is not enough. It's the mind that ages you, because the mind controls the emotion, and the emotion controls the hormones, And the hormones, cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, adrenaline, all these catecholamines, this is what ages you. Having a passion for life is what de-ages you. Why do you think so many very creative, passionate, balanced people live such long lives, even when they're not doing everything healthy? Now, if they do stuff that's healthy and have that passion, then they can be as young as they want to be. Your emotional age. Think of how serious you've been. Think of how much time you haven't spent playing. Play is important every day of our lives. But if you get so tied up into your problems, then you don't have time to play. Or, I don't want to play, I'm too serious. Yeah, but you got to play to get away from being so serious. We're too serious. Think of the novels you read. Think of the movies you see that are so serious because you are mirroring the seriousness in your own life. You're finding something to identify with. The person who's victimized in the film, you are also victimized. You share an affinity for being victimized. What if you started to play more? How would you do that? What kind of play would you put in your life? Would you take risks in play? We don't take enough risks. We try to live a very protected life. Taking risks is essential. In fact, one of the things that excites us about the rebel is they're willing to take risks that we wouldn't. We'd play it safe. Spiritual. Connected to all this, of course, is whether or not we have a connection to that which is eternally true. You know, the nice thing of it is that every one of the great spiritual leaders throughout history was a rebel. Did you know that? They were all rebels. Now, isn't it interesting that the people who now will use those spiritual figures as being rebels became ultra-conservative non-rebels? Do you see any hypocrisy in that? Or schizophrenia in most of these beliefs? Do you see what I'm saying? Our whole belief, our whole meaning for living is based upon rebels, but we're going to be ultra-conservative and no, I don't want anyone to be a rebel around me. Makes no sense. Connecting with a higher spiritual self means you're not afraid of life. And if you're not afraid of life, you're not afraid to say what you are and declare yourself. And whatever it means, because you're not afraid of loss, because spirits don't have loss. What can you take away from a spirit? What can you take away? Can you jail a spirit? No, you can't. Did Martin Luther King become less spiritual when he got out of jail? Did Nelson Mandela become less spiritual when he got out of jail? Did he lose his spirit in jail? No, not at all. So if you know that you're guided by your higher self, then everything in life is there to enjoy and to play with. Because nothing can be taken away from you that's as important as self. Materialistic things come and go, just like the shoes you had to have, the dress you were going to drop dead for, and you saved for it, and then you forgot about a year later, right? Everything else come and go. Life is very, very fluid. The trouble is our current belief systems try to make stability and permanency a part of that paradigm, and it doesn't work. Everything keeps changing, and we keep being angry at the changes that keep occurring that we can't control. Well, life was meant to change, and change all the time. So if you get into the whole habit of changing all the time, then you're always fluid. Nothing is static. You're not trying to defend the old ways. The good old days were never that good. As someone who says, oh, wouldn't it have been great to, you know, when I was out in the bayous, I was doing some interviews actually on an investigation on Monday, and I was talking with someone on this boat and says, we're taking some pictures out this window of some of these beautiful bayou country, and the person says, oh, man, what it'd been like in the good old days. I said, good old days? First, to sit out there, you'd have been bitten by snakes, alligators, phantom spiders. You would have had to have worn clothes that were extraordinarily restricting and uncomfortable. It would have been 110 degrees with 100% humidity, and you'd have been petticoats and all kinds of clothes. There was no air conditioning. There was no running water. You only cistern water. And I said, that would not have been a healthy way of living. I says, now, take a good look at the way the people have always lived, and you'll start seeing all the special limitations that we don't look at when we want to look at everything through a different pair of eyes. So get in the habit of looking, if you would, at what you're willing to change. And the more you're willing to change, the younger you're going to get. Because now you're reversing your cycle of mindset. Instead of being permanent, I want a permanent everything, then you don't have to have a permanent job. Then you're free to continue your growth and exploration of all the other things you could do in life. This whole idea of everyone being a bubba living in a trailer park going, they unemployed me. You know, and they're sitting there drinking a Bud, watching television, watching Oprah, and going, God damn, I am worked. Give me some more Wonder Bread. Well, what can you do, Bubba? I can't do nothing. I got to be on welfare for the next 80 years. Yeah. Well, gee, did you ever think about maybe there's something else in life you could do except putting bolts on a tire? I don't know nothing else. Do you want to study? No! And that's that mindset. And then there are those people who say, hey, glad I got unemployed. Gives me an opportunity to grow. I wasn't going to grow. Now I'm forced to grow. All right? I'm looking forward to doing something altogether different. And it's exciting doing something different, isn't it? I mean, just getting up each day and going to learn something new. Altogether new. Right? And then committing yourself to that newness. Because it's a way of evolving. And that's why growth is so important. I look at life as everything in life is a momentary relationship. Could you imagine what would change if every relationship were only in the moment? And the only ones that stick are the ones that keep pace in their own growth of letting go. It's like two eagles soaring. Which eagle stops soaring? The one that becomes aware of its own mortality and is afraid of falling. That's the one that stops, and that's the one that dies. When you don't fear all of the issues of security, then you're free to be insecure. In being insecure and being free to explore it, you realize these are artificial fears. I don't need them any longer. I don't need all of these permanent structures in my life to have a life. My life is greater than the sum total of all this that's been cluttering it. I want to be the spirit that flies. And when you start flying with very little, you're free to fly wherever you want. And that's scary. That's terrifying. But it's exhilarating also. Gives you a whole new sense of purpose. And you'll meet new people. Remember, no shortages in life. How many times have you seen people working on relationships where the energy just wasn't connecting? But they're working on it for stability. Who cares about stability? Eh? Purpose is more significant if it's a function, if purpose is a function of life for the meaning of life. Isn't it more essential to have a life that has meaning and purpose in its freedom to explore, to experience, and to be, and to honor that which you are and everyone else that you meet, than a person that's merely interested in the coherence of the relationship so that we can show that we stuck it out. We can make it work. The last thing I ever want to hear is, we can make it work. Bad words. If it doesn't work, it's never going to work. Right? In this life, things either connect or they miss. Now, the nice thing about missing is we like to deceive ourselves that we almost made it, right? I grew up in a little town, West Virginia, where a lot of people played the numbers. And I'd hear this from my own family. Oh, I dreamt of it. I dreamt this number, and oh, I only missed it by four. Yeah, it was $25 you just lost, I'd say. No, but you don't understand, I was only four numbers away. Well, who cares? If I jumped across the Grand Canyon and everyone says, right on, and I missed it by a quarter of an inch, I'm still dead. Doesn't matter how close I came, and life is not how close you come. You either do it or you don't do it. Right? No one's going to remember that you got to the 25th mile mark and you dropped out of the marathon. They remember when you come across and you get that medal around your neck. Then you've earned the honor of the other people. Stopping along the way doesn't get you the sense of self. So a lot of people play this game. Now, physical, look at your age. Is your body matching the age you want to be? You got to do some work, right? Are you doing the work? Okay, more than walking, you got to be lifting weights. Okay? Oh, no, don't give this kind of... You got to lift weights. What do you want to have? Nice, trim body and a big gut and big, you know, skinny little chicken arms? Go out there. The whole body works, you know, again, don't develop one part. This is not about developing only one small part. It's about developing everything. Remember, you're developing the total sum of your life, not just something that is convenient for you. Otherwise, you get into this habit of, like these people who go out and meditate, they go out and do yoga, and then they go home and yell at someone. But I meditated an hour ago. I spent $100. I did a lot of stretching. Yeah, but now you've been out of shape. Well, I'll go meditate twice tomorrow. I know someone's analysis 5 days a week. 5 days a week? One day is too much. I don't believe in that. Your career. Where do you need to be in your career? Okay, huh? Where you want to be, there's a concept of mastery. If what you're doing is worth doing right, shouldn't you try to understand the rules of mastery? Do you ever look at taking something that was done right versus something that was done wrong? Would you want to drive a car across the Alps that someone said, hey, I don't care how I put this engine in, screw it. Who needs to tighten these tires? Ah, screw it. Who cares? So it's 20 miles and falls off. It's not my life. Hey, I'm from Detroit. Now you're going to say, hey, Jack, did you master that? It really tight? Right? Makes a difference when you think of it like that, right? Going in for coronary bypass? Doctor, have you really mastered this? Mastered it? Who's got time to master anything today? I'm so busy being social and trying to be on everyone's committee. Look, the worst that can happen when I cut the chest open is I don't recognize which organ's the heart. So I give you an open bypass liver. Okay? You'd stay awake. Don't give me an anesthesia. I gotta look there. Look. That's not my heart. Mastery. See? Mastery. Because what happens when you try to master something? What happens?
Strive for improvement.
You strive for improvement. Good. Important. What else?
It feels good as you improve and you want to continue to improve.
Right. Because you're growing in your knowledge, your awareness, your skills, and your inner wisdom. Is there peace and an awareness of that peace that comes with mastery?
I haven't been there, so I would hope so.
Be honest, right? What do you do?
I work in a bank.
Oh, that's good. No, no, he's honest. He works in a bank. Ah! Which bank? My money's coming out tomorrow, Jack. 112, was that $53 I gave?
Well, that's why I recently changed jobs. Though.
Which bank?
Which bank do I work for now? I work for Republic National.
Oh. Public National? You got your money there? Is that the one that gave all those blames to Iraq?
Jobs. When I walked in the morning, I hated myself for walking in the morning.
Well, I wasn't going to bring this to everyone else did too. So leave the job. Get rid of this banker's clothes. Isn't it, look, wouldn't you like to just dress different? Huh?
I do.
No, without this, you do it differently?
East Village by night.
No, not, I saw that, the black mask, the tight pants.
Huh? That was you the other day?
Yes, oh. See? You can always tell them. A banker with a cause. The rebel banker, giving out money. Hey, I like your looks, take another 100. Rockefeller won't mind, he's dead. He died smiling, didn't he? That's what we have. Okay, so the idea is mastery within a field. Because mastery gives you a sense of purpose, interdisciplinary skills, and a connection between what you're mastering and the people who will be a part of that. When I learn nutrition, I'm still learning. I study 6 hours a day. And the reason I do is the mastery. Now, I've never mastered it. And I don't believe anyone truly masters everything. They are always capable of learning. And the most innovative people are the ones who think that they've gotten to a plateau, there's nothing more to learn, and then they start taking what they have learned and breaking through barriers. In science, in medicine, in the arts, suddenly we see a whole new, you know, a whole new way of doing something. That took someone who had to have that sense of mastery to do it. They had to go beyond what they already knew. And that's that innovation, that's that freedom, that's being that rebel. So you see, you can be the rebel and be conscientious, be focused, be disciplined, be integrated in your thought processes. Your friends. Where do you want to be with your friends? Your family. Your sex life. Your assertiveness. Your anger, anxiety, depression, boredom, joy, passion. People have these. It's not bad to have these. It's not a judgment. It's simply that if you do have these, isn't it best to understand what could change how you have these? So that if you get angry about something, I get angry about things, but instead of hurting anyone, being angry at myself or feeling helpless or angry at someone else, I take the anger, turn it into motivation, and then purposefulness of that motivation, and go out and do something. Like I will see something that's wrong, that I feel is wrong, and I will go out and try to change it. Whether it's something in the environment or nutrition or medicine, whatever the abuse is that's going on, I will not allow my anger simply to be a wanton anger. That is no good. And yet in our society we have all this anger that's either tied up that kills a person or is thrown against the wrong people. And that's non-constructive. Anger is fine. It's a normal, healthy emotion. It's necessary if it's channeled constructively into purpose. It must be peaceful, positive, and creative. So taking anger and making something constructive from it is great. Taking anger and just making something destructive, what's the purpose? And that's the difference. I mean, have you ever noticed that every rebel has an anger in them? But it's what they're doing with the anger. And we have a lot of people who are angry and they're just narcissistic. It's just, you know, it's all on themselves. Your health. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? Now, if you really want to be healthy as you can be, if you want to be as healthy as you could be if you were an ideally healthy 25-year-old or 27-year-old, then you've got to change an awful lot. That means you've got to have mastery, right? Mastery of your body, mastery of your mind, mastery of your spirit, mastery of your integrated processes so you don't ever eat anything that's wrong. A couple weeks ago, I went to a restaurant with Mitch Proffman and a couple other people, and we were given a giant pizza. It was a wheat-free, dairy-free, yeast-free pizza. It's made from spelt, and it was fine. It was a healthy pizza. Took one little piece, all right? See how good it was, because I had to see whether I would recommend it or not recommend it as a restaurant. I recommend it because I feel it's necessary for people. I don't eat pizza. But I want people who are in a transition to be able to go from here to here. I want to be able to have points of transition. It's like little plateaus that they feel a little comfort where they can get to some place, because not everyone's capable of just going like that. Not everyone can just make changes automatically. Depending upon your life energy, dynamics can make changes. Most people are not dynamics, do not make changes, complete gestalt changes. So you give people plateaus that they can reach, assess, let them stay there for a little bit of time, feeling this new sense of accomplishment, give them some good positive feedback. Hey, job well done. You know, it's good that you're making these changes. You give some people some strokes. There's nothing wrong with congratulating people, making people realize that you appreciate the efforts they're taking. That's a very important connection with human beings. But most people are only interested in themselves. They don't want to hear what you're doing. They only want to hear what them. They want everything to come their way. And that's that insecurity. That's that narcissistic insecurity. So I notice that couple of people at the table, they couldn't stop eating. They just couldn't stop. They chose not to stop because they had no sense of self. Now, when you look at a person's body that has no discipline, it shows. But that's a person that's never chosen to enforce a discipline. And I'll tell you what, nothing else in their life will they go to the highest level on any area of their life. They'll always stop short. Always. Remember, you cannot have dysfunction in one part of your life and manifest a complete integrated self in other parts. Can't do it. And that's what I see. And then you say to these people, gee, why didn't you go further? Well, and there's always an excuse. Always excuses. Pizza was good. I don't know if other people would like the pizza because they're used to cheese and...
Where was it? Cafe Viva?
Yeah. So look at your body because it's going to take mastery. It's going to take discipline. It's going to take being a rebel who's not going to care what other people think about what you're doing. It's your body. It's your life. It's going to be able to let your hair grow if you want it to grow. I don't have an awareness of why everybody likes short hair. Hair is natural. Let your hair grow to see how you'd look with long hair. Older women in particular. I think it's shameful in our society that older women are not allowed to have long hair. They all end up getting these short little haircuts and frosting them purple. I mean, they do this all the time. And if they, maybe it's because they're afraid of osteoporosis that they should fall better to break their hip than their head. Because if they land on the head will bounce back from all the hairspray they have. So maybe it's just a protection. And they'll have all these, I see them, I went into this hair salon today, and I was watching this woman who used to live in my building, and she has this wonderful manicure, right? And she has all this hair cut and frosted and everything else. And she had a pedicure. And she has the most ugly, out-of-shape body in the world. I mean, it's just, they're bulges that I didn't think could be on a human body. And so she's kind of walking like this, unaware. I'm thinking, is there something she's not seeing? And she looks in the mirror. What's she doing? Going to hold up a foot and a hand? Hi! My name's Grace. See my hair, hands, and feet, but don't look at the rest of me. Do you ever notice that? Won't do anything about their health, but their fingernails they will. To me, that makes no sense. We have to have something that is more natural. I'd like to see people let their hair grow, bankers in particular. I mean, not everyone should look like Oliver North. You start to act like Oliver North or Pat Buchanan. Right? So it's all right to let it flow. But in our society, people get a haircut. Get a haircut. Faggot, get a haircut. Commie, lefty. Remember all those things? They'd yell at you. Fear. Fear over hair. Now, isn't it stupid to fear hair? Right? Well, next time you look in the mirror and you look at your hair, ask yourself, what would happen if you really let it grow? Don't tell me you did that when you were 18. Everybody did everything at 18. You know, well, we did that in the 60s, Gary. Yeah, but you ain't in the 60s now, are you? And you're not 18 now. Let it happen now and see what happens. Huh? Because when you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror, you should see the ideal self. And you should always keep a vision, no matter what you physically look like in that moment. You should look in the mirror and see what you ideally want to look like. You should always keep looking at the ideal. You don't see the fat, you see the trim body, you see the ripples on the belly, you see the tightness in the legs, you see the strength in the arms. You see someone who could go out and do a marathon or do a mountain climb, who could go roller skating or who could do snorkeling. Whatever you want to do, you've got the body to do it. And you're not going to be ashamed of it. And there's the way you do that is integrating all the positives. And that includes discipline.
Next week, part two. Thank you for listening and have a nice day. Mother, mother.
There's too many of you to cry.